Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Quintessential Listening Poetry. Tonight is our monthly open mic poetry reading. The call-in number is 676-787-1631, so please call in. More importantly, tonight we feature the work of noted poet Anne Christine Tabaka. I will be joined in a few minutes by poet Marianne Silk. She and I will read poems written by Ms. Tabaka. First, I'd like to share a few words about Anne Christine Tabaka. She has been nominated for the Pushcart Prize in Poetry, has been internationally published, and won poetry awards from numerous publications. She's extremely prolific. She lives in the state of Delaware. She loves gardening and cooking. She lives with her husband and three cats. Her most recent credits are Pomona Valley Review, Page and Spine, West Texas Literary Review, The Hungry Chimera, Sheila Nagig, Synchronized Chaos, Pangolin Review, Triggerfish Critical Review, Foliot Oak Review, Better Than Starbucks, Muse, The Right Launch, The Straight Branch, The McKinley Review, and Fourth and Sycamore. So again, she's extremely, extremely prolific, and we are honored to have an opportunity to share her work. I'm here with my colleague and my friend, fellow poet, renowned poet in her own right, Marianne Silk. Marianne, are you there?
I am.
All right. How are you tonight?
Oh, pretty well, thanks. Oh man, you know, it's crazy getting to the phone, but we've got it all done.
All right, fantastic. Are you ready to share some of Miss Tabaka's work?
Sure, I am.
All right. Well, I think I'll start.
Okay, sounds good.
The piece is titled "Remembering Mom." The smell of bread baking and strong laundry soap, it clung to her like perfume. Face scrubbed clean, hands red and labor rough, the smile of an angel. Patchwork apron tied tight in a neat bow, always humming that sweet tune as she did. No one left to call out her name. She preferred it that way. After years of neglect and abuse, she gave all she had to give, and we took it in return. How I miss that dear woman today. The end. Marianne?
Okay. I think I want to read old photographs first. It's about Christine's finding old cigar boxes filled with old black and white pictures when she was going through her mother's belongings before moving her into a nursing home. Old photographs. Trapped beneath a curtain of crepuscular remembrances, an eerie sensation looking back on old photographs. A black and white specter of a life I no longer recognize, touched with shades of gray. Vacant eyes staring back at me from an inaccessible realm, a world long forgotten. Wrangled images, a lamentable parenthesis of my existence. Ephemeral emotions overwhelm, then enact Acadia. A deep breath exhales. I wipe my memories clean, then once more remove all evidence of my past life. Thank you.
The next piece is Rainy Day Charm. A rainy day falls from the sky. bare feet splash in puddles, cloud filtered like imparts a dreamy glow. The feeling of motionless time invades reality. Inside stillness, listening to the sounds of soft rain makes, melodic trickling transfixes the mind. A lazy yawn emanates, permeating the silence. Outside, small riblets form, carrying dried leaf boats out to swirling miniature seas, teasing the imagination stories unfold. Bright azure patches peek through an overcast sky, wishing for a rainbow. Rainy day charm wanes as the day lapses into evening, and a soggy world closes its eyes once more. The end. All right.
Okay. I'll read Red Sky. That seems to go well.
Red Sky.
Red skies, blue promises. I remember you when the lilacs were in bloom. You held out your hand. I was lost in your history of castles and white knights, begging for another caress, only to be discarded. Dragged through the darkness, like a frightened child, the ocean called to me by name. I answered with a sigh. Like so many dandelion seeds, I was scattered adrift, nothing left to give but a red sky. Thank you.
I like to read, and the rains came. The storm had passed after raging for hours, a deluge of major proportions. Last evening, the main road was a swift-moving river. Now it was up to the ankles in slimy brown mud. Everyone scratched their heads. What was to be done now? Even the dog from across the way stood frozen with concern, like some comical statue. He seemed determined that muddy paws were not part of his day, mud baths being for swine and not canine. Shattered tree corpses caught up in the flooding, their branches emerging from the mud like a scorched forest, reminiscent of a bizarre miniature landscape from an old science fiction film, barren and colorless. Old folks tell of similar storms. They happened decades ago, or so it is said. Memories being such as they are, stories cannot be relied upon for their retelling. Looking up, the sky hung heavy and dark. More rain will come, adding to an already distressing situation. Even the birds are silent. No echoing songs from the woodlands, the dead quiet, an omen. We walked away knowing more mud was coming, and for the moment nothing could be done. And then once again, the rains came as if there was no end, and perhaps there wasn't. The end.
That is such a timely poem, sadly a timely poem with all the storms we've been having.
And very much so. I really agree.
I'm going to read another storm poem. Storm is at hand. Her words were like a dark cloud blocking out the sun, low-hanging and ominous, overpowering the day. The grayness followed her, waiting for the storm to arrive. The stillness was so thick, it was oppressive. The silence was deafening. Birds blackened the sky with their escape route, plucked feathers falling like rain, flowers withering under the weight, anguished faces turning upwards as stale breadcrumbs spill from their mouths, self-doubt creeping in as more clouds gather. The sky is now black. There is no place to run. The storm is at hand. Thank you.
Here's a poem about Anne Christine's father. It's called One More Ride. Father worked the rails. Free passage was our right. Hours rocking back and forth to the constant rhythm of the train. Foreheads pressed to cool, fuliginous windows. Scenery streaming by at a giddying pace. Large cities, small towns, fluorescent farmland all a blur. The somnolent clickety-clack of wheels motoring onward, miles of track laid north to south, east to west, once the lifeblood of transportation. Memories, hard and soft now, collide, as once great escapades also blur in my aging mind. One more ride, just one more ride, and I shall be home soon. The end.
Yeah, that was a nice ending.
Yes, it was. Great piece, great piece.
I think after all the storms, I'd like to read Sun Salutation, which you told me is just been published.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Sun Salutation. Daybreak pierces night, wiping away the sleep, plucking stars from the heavens, placing them neatly in a basket made of dreams. Erasing darkness with amber streaks, the sun kisses the day. Dew-drenched grasses glisten with diminutive prism globes. Warmth overtakes the chill as hours march on. Clouds drift by announcing their presence with purple shadows, crowning the land. Time has no master while light rules the day. Evening brings with it a daunting stillness as it invades the glen. A sleepy day says adieu as it awaits tomorrow's sun salutation. Thank you.
I like that.
Yeah.
Beautiful piece. The next piece is titled Waiting. Hardback wooden chairs, dull pale green walls, minutes morph into hours, thoughts rush forward then retreat, racing back into the blackness. Outside, morning rain falls softly, reminiscent of an old song with emotions rising to the tune like so many smoke clouds evaporating into the atmosphere. Poppy seed salad dressing added to the grocery list. Phone calls need to be returned. The black cat on the video cries, bringing reality back into focus. Time has no master but itself, and so the day continues like a ping pong game of the mind where no one loses and no one wins. Notebook resting on a lap, words written on a page, conclude the next chapter, all the while sitting in a hardback wooden chair. The end.
Hey, I'd like to read The Blink of an Eye. The blink of an eye, the understanding of time, fleeting moments never recaptured, sitting on windowsills of the mind. In little jars and vases, fragments of the past collide and are reborn. The cost is too dear to step outside of the window's light. Daily prayers collected and sent for the purpose of extending days like the long-fingered shadow of trees reaching out at evening time. Fading memories are reborn as pirate ships in the mist, sailing into a fiery sunset, never to be seen again. Meanwhile, time, the eternal predator, takes a bite out of your morning toast, now dry and cold from all that has transpired in the blink of the eye.
Right. The very last piece that I have that I'm proud to recite is titled Scented Memories. Scented memories waft through the air, expectations widen the eyes of hope, brushing away cobwebs from the lost corners of time. Synapses fire off as muted sounds of distant voices manifest themselves among the garbled words of blank faces. History in reverse, snippets resurfacing, if only for a moment. That old chair seems familiar. Was it always there? Grocery lists piled on the table, mixed in with last week's mail. Forgotten love letters reaching back into the bottom drawers of an old credenza, threadbare and finger-worn. Recollections play lost and found in the recesses of shadowed dreams, while the aroma of another time makes it all seem so close and real again, if only for a short time. The sweet memory of scent. I think that's my personal favorite.
Yes, oh yes.
Beautiful.
And now the last poem that I have is Silver Lake Ocracoke. And in that poem, the two lovers are the evening and the lake, not human lovers. Silver Lake Ocracoke, long fingers of night reach out for evening, embracing her with soft velvet arms. Quietude is her name. She lives for this moment. Diamonds dance across the surface of the water. Rhythmic waves lap at a gray pebbly beach as the last rays of sun are swallowed by the horizon. Anchored boats with white sails, now merely ghosts against a wine-colored sky. Far off, cries of marsh-bound shorebirds fade with the light. A space between reality and dream, filled with enchantment. The cosmos sings to romance, a curtain call for the moon, as lovers walk off hand in hand. Thank you.
And Christine, thank you for giving us an opportunity to read and share your work. It's beautiful.
Yes, I agree with Mike. And actually, I have another poem of Christine's that I could read if you'd like.
Oh, yeah, great, please.
Yeah, it just so happens that I have another one of her poems, one I really like. Although I really like Silver Lake Ocracoke. That is a really good poem. But it take me a sec to find this. And is Christine going to talk, answer questions, or?
No, it's just primarily us sharing her work.
Oh, okay. And this is Christine's Anticipation. This is a poem I really like. It's another stormy poem. Anticipation. Dark and defiant, the tempest rages, bulldozing over the forsaken shore, scrubbed raw by the angry waves, sandblasted, remnants of an old boat, soggy with time, rattle and creak with each gust. A lone figure stands guard, huddled against the rocks, rain-drenched yellow slicker pulled tightly about her body. The excitement engulfs her as she waits for the storm to tear her open and quench the fire within. Okay.
All right. Very nice. Very nice.
Thanks.
Beautiful piece.
Yes,
right, again,
that,
to you.
It truly is.
Yes, to you and Christine, thank you so much. And we'll be right back with the open mic. The number is 646-787-1631. Please call in. We should have a really nice time tonight. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you very much.
We are back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'd like to welcome you to Quintessential Listening Poetry, a different kind of poetry call-in show. Again, the telephone number is 646-787-1631, so please call in. We should have an opportunity to listen to a number of different works. I think what I'll do, though, is start us off and wait on some callers to call in. I'd like to share some pieces that I've had an opportunity to write over the years. Here's a piece titled Wolf. It was an inauspicious day when he decided to unloosen life's leash. His frayed black leash had become too tight, clawing his bedraggled neck with no regard for the anger or words bottled up in his throat. He couldn't scream or ask for release to romp, play, or run free. He couldn't pull and lunge at everything or, heaven forbid, speak to Miss June Jackson, the beaten-down young woman who often blushed in his presence. So he packed up his belongings in a brown paper bag, opened the unguarded gate, and ran away. The end. It's Wolf. The next piece is titled, If You Buy a Bus Ticket in Advance, It's Still First Come, First Serve. He boarded the crowded bus on a damp Monday morning following a restless night in a cold North Carolina town. Sentenced like a dead man walking down the center aisle, he passed row after row of other weary passengers who sat quietly, tightly clutching their wrinkled bus tickets paid for with small bills and large dreams. Can I sit here? He nervously asked the girl with long braided hair tipped in blue. He didn't recognize young black women anymore. An empty seat entitled her large bejeweled mascara bag. There was no place for Rosa. She eyed him up and down and indifferently grunted yes, then slowly moved her baggage off the empty seat beside her. You can bring some baggage with you, or you can store it in the cabin above the seat or above the bus, or excuse me, at the bottom of the bus. He thought about the string of automated words he had heard countless times before. Yet graciously, he mumbled, thank you. He quickly found a place in the small cubbyhole above the seat to store his scuttled dreams. The fabric on the seat was plusher than expected. He nestled into his unlikely comfort, a seat already tear-stained with memories. He closed his eyes and thought, maybe there was room for Rosa. He tightly clutched his scrunched ticket, paid for with small bills and large dreams. The next piece was written during the Iraq War, when every night there were images on TV about the war. And so this piece is titled Dan, Tom, and Peter. 6 o'clock p.m. Helicopter fire, mortars, machine guns, bombs in cars, random bus gunfire, rocket-propelled grenades. I feel the anxiety starting. Bombs thrown by fellow U.S. soldiers, vehicle accidents drowned in the canal, another non-hostile vehicle accident. I can't breathe. Truck bombs. Tank fell into the river during combat operations. 6:05 p.m. CBS discovered bodies executed and burnt. Tortured citizens. Suicide truck bombs. Severed heads. Explosives. Detonated. Kidnapped. I can't scream. I feel choked by my own hands. Ambushed by enemy fire rockets. Mortars, 50 bodies found in a ravine, U.S. suicide car bomb, a suicide fuel tanker bomb, suicide bomber kills and wounds hundreds, death squads accelerated their killings. 16 men killed. 6:10 p.m. I can smell the mass graves that mark lost dreams and lost hopes. Immediately after the attack, thousands of mutilated bodies dumped around the Capitol, CNN breaking news. 200 bodies found in a ravine today. I taste their blood. The number of non-hostile vehicles accidents increased this week. 6:15 p.m. I no longer cry. No time to whisper goodbye to unknown warriors. Automatic weapons, explosions, helicopter fire, helicopter crash, helicopter collision, numbered and numbed by the human mountains being climbed to conquer like the Himalayas. 6:20 p.m. The executed were found bound and shot with machine guns. Death becomes another day in the neighborhood. I sit exhausted with no energy or real desire to curl a fist and protest. The wave of anxiety is killing me. 6:25 p.m. The cost of the war has grown into trillions. Soldiers are committing suicide at rapidly growing rates. I hold my head in shame. 6:29 p.m. Breaking news on NBC. The last five-minute increment. A little puppy who had lost his way was returned to his rightful owner by a kind passerby. Whew, my anxiety has passed. Thank God it turned out to be a good day after all. That's Dan, Tom, and Peter. The next piece is titled Mechanics of Aretha Around Midnight. As we all know, that Aretha Franklin passed several weeks ago, and this was my tribute to her. Again, it's Mechanics of Aretha Around Midnight. Late at night, I sit on the floor. I drink ice-cold cherry lemonade and eat large spoonfuls of peanut butter from a kid-tested plastic Peter Pan jar. I listen to music which softly plays on the wobbly old brown record player stored in the corner of my room. Motown, epicenter of the sounds of young America, Philly soul served fresh from the city of brotherly love. The jazz of Train, the favorite syncopated song, small town North Carolina, and the queen of soul, Miss Aretha Franklin, the gospel and soul siren who crossed over the chasm that is the land of the free, a sun-kissed mockingbird whose cavernous voice created new routes to the moon. Alone, sitting in the dark, I listen to these cadent sounds and voices carved into disc-shaped black vinyl, 45 RPM speed records which deliberately skip forward and backward, yet playfully repeat the same 1.8 seconds of track. A strange mix of audio, clicks, pops, warped, and locked grooves that transport me into three complete minutes of love, of pain, of sadness, three soulful minutes that round midnight soothe parts of my young, misunderstood, already broken heart. You better not scratch that record. Evil words spewed by my younger sister, a bad-mannered girl who regularly wore crimson and cream-colored hooped earrings and my mama's sapphire bejeweled scarf to bed each night. This ain't the weekend. Two tired voices from down two doors down the hall yell in unison, you've got school in the morning. Lights turned off. Music turned down squeaky low. Still in trance, I stay up around midnight, moved by the dust scratches, audio clicks and pops of the queen's soulful strength, and other heartfelt crooning carved into disc-shaped black vinyl, healing my heart and wounded, beating heart. That's the Mechanics of Aretha Around Midnight. The final piece before we take a break is called, it's titled, Jules and Jim Are Gone, or Dear Jules and Jim Are Gone, or Dear Francois Truffaut, 1962. I dreamed of my plan to see Jean. We, below the cerulean sky, high above the indigo beaches of the Côte d'Azur, she in the passenger seat, besotted like wine in our love, the playfulness of Candide still floating in the air. I hesitated, lost, and miles from the next exit. An unexpected knock on the door. Charcoal memories had decided to visit me again. Depressed and lonely, they rubbed against me like a mating guinea bird. I struggled to understand. I cursed in the lazily daylight. I moaned in the sable-covered moonlight, exasperation escaping through my throat. A feeling of dread crawled over my body. Beckett peacefully slept while I waited for Godot, gasping anticipation of a non-existent character in a play. I hesitated, lost, and miles from the next exit. Perhaps The past will repeat itself. I breathe in and out to this thought. I wrestled the obsidian nights before. Tenderly held my own bloody defeat. The defining and deafening silence of an unfulfilled life. Victory, unattainable in one-sided skirmish. The war drum suddenly silent. Murkiness moved on and knocked on a new door. The strains of Lily Marlene in the distance. I hesitated, lost and miles from the next exit. I dream of my plan to see Jean. We, below the cerulean sky, high above the indigo beaches of the Côte d'Azur. She in the passenger seat, besotted like wine in our love. The playfulness of Candide still floating in the air. We turn left onto the Rue du Temple. Blue-stained memories await us there. That's Jules and Jim are gone, or dear Francois Truffaut, 1962. Here's one last piece, and then we'll take a break. It's called Eleusis, Birthplace of Aeschylus. My life has fallen apart. I see the Acropolis in the distance. Grief comforts me as I lonely lay amongst the pieces. I gently cleave to the remains of my existence. Now like forgotten ruins that whisper tales of ancient defeats that rest beside me. Too fragile to restore me to my worth. I suffer the coldness in the air. No warm coffin to serve as my blanket. So again, thank you for listening, and we'll be right back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and welcome back to Quintessential Listening Poetry, a different kind of poetry call-in show. Tonight is our monthly call-in show, so please do so and share your poetry. All different genres are accepted, so please call in. The call-in number is 646-787-1631, and we welcome your call. We do have another caller. Hold on 1 second.
Hello, Michael?
Yes, hold on 1 second. Yes, hello.
Yes, Ethan. How are you?
Hello, Ethan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
Great, great. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, well, it's the same phone that Marianne called in from.
Yes, all right.
It,
well, please share some of your poetry, Ethan.
Okay, and thanks for doing this fantastic show, which, you know, poets don't get much notice, so... Great that you're doing this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure. Here is the poem. It's called A Hair's Breadth. One spring morning, doing yard work, I glance up at the fat brown bunny grazing lazily on our untrimmed grass. She pauses as if to say, "What, salad again for breakfast today?" A rabbit is just a machine, some scientists say, only slightly more advanced than a Roomba, designed for devouring grass and spawning legions of bunnies. I prefer to think she has a soul, though her one eye turned toward me seems blank. Is she aware of me as a conscious being? In any case, she is my long-lost kin from 65 million years ago, when our common foremother, hairy, warm-blooded, and quivering, somehow escaped the fate of the dinosaurs. I've seen this rabbit before. Almost every day, she's nibbling on the grass. Our yard, I think, is her entire world. She's lost her fear of humans. Lets me get within a hair's breadth before I back away. But something startled her, a premonition, perhaps. I glance up again to see her bounding to some other yard, some other world. That's it.
All right. That was great, Ethan. Tell me about the genesis of that poem. What was the inspiration?
I saw the rabbit in the yard. I don't know. That's probably it.
He saw a rabbit in the yard.
Dawkins or something?
No, that had nothing to do with Dawkins.
Oh.
Well, it is okay, it's a little bit like another poem I wrote, kind of about
yes,
Richard
please.
Dawkins. Oh, you want me to read another one?
Yes, please.
Oh, well, I thought one would be enough. Hold on. Let's see. Oh, this one that I'm about to read has just been accepted by Blazevox, if you know Blazevox. You probably don't know Blazevox. Okay, this is a reply to Richard Dawkins. And if you know Richard Dawkins is the militant atheist.
All right.
I think he's a biologist or some kind of evolutionary biologist. And our friend John McDonald might not be too happy with this poem. But anyway.
All right.
It's called A Reply to Richard Dawkins. And the opening is it an epigraph or an epigram? I get them mixed up. The opening little saying is, I refute it thus.
I think it's epigram.
Samuel Johnson is kicking a stone to refute Bishop Berkeley's theory of the non-existence of matter. Okay. Perhaps we are automatons that exist only to survive and breed, spewing out new generations. Perhaps personality, individuality, consciousness, is just an accident, a flickering illusion emanating from a collection of impulses only seeming to cohere. If you sever one part of the brain, you are not the same person. You lose speech, memory, the ability to reason. You are an exquisite corpse. You are garble. You are you, yet not you. Perhaps the brain is just a collection of impulses, a sophisticated computer that has caused us to become the most successful species on this planet, at least until we finish our collective suicide, obliterating wondrous multitudes along with ourselves, redwoods and black bears, bees and spiders, fungi and sloths, eagles and robins and worms, aardvarks and ants, the delicate web of life that we are part of and yet act apart from. We are the uber species, killing us softly. Monty Python had it right. The search for meaning is a kind of joke, not even a cosmic joke, but a minor giggle, a hiccup that cannot be terrified or drowned away, a byproduct of the struggle to breed. A spirit, a source of pure love, rubs against me and purrs. So that's it.
Wow, Ethan, you've come a long way with your poetry.
Thank you.
It's very
well,
much
you remember,
a beautiful piece.
I used to
of course I remember.
Other people's work. When
right, I remember.
Kafka short stories.
Yes, that's beautiful, Ethan. I'm very proud of you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Is Marianne going to share anything?
Marianne, do you want to? She has to get a book.
Oh, I can read something new.
Oh, she has something new. It'll take.
All right.
It'll take her a little bit to get it up. Meanwhile,
do you have another
our
one?
Me, I think two is enough.
Okay.
Our cats
all
are
right,
here.
Then.
They're listening very intently, and one of them is the cat that inspired. Well, the cats inspire a lot of our poems.
All right.
They're here. They're not. They seem to be listening. They might be the best audience. Aaron, you
well,
have
let
it?
Me take a little.
Okay, I'm passing you to Marianne.
All right, then.
Okay, this is a poem that has just been republished at Verse Virtual. It's Facing East at Dawn, after a photograph by Jeff Clark, Northscape Photography, Presque Isle, Maine. So way up Maine. The driftwood is a hand grasping something, then letting it go. Stars scatter above, as if this hand, not God's, had tossed them into the morning sky. Up there, they grow brighter. They will fade once lemon sunrise washes away night. Yet there is light now. Stars band together into the Milky Way. Clouds form like clusters of maple leaves clinging to water. The water is itself. It reflects nothing. It rests beneath the sky, awaiting sunrise, and its long day is a sparkling mirror. It contains everything. Cans, rocks, hornpout, weeds. Before dawn, its splash on the shore is quieter. No birds break its surface. Across the lake, someone's car rounds the curve from the next town near to sunrise. Its light is a fallen star. Soon others will follow. Thank you.
All right, Marianne, that was beautiful. What was the inspiration?
I think these are poems from last summer, not this past summer, but last summer. And each July I participate in this poetry challenge.
Yes.
And I was looking around for inspiration. I saw these gorgeous photographs from Presque Isle, Maine. Don't ask me how I was looking for, you know, Presque Isle, but I found these gorgeous photographs. And Facing East at Dawn is of the moment that the sun, I guess actually it's probably pre-dawn. You can see all the stars. You can see the light. You can see the sky turn green. It's like, you know, in between day and night, or night and day.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you a link to the photograph. You know, when I'm done, and you know, when the show's over, I'll send you a link.
Yes, I like that.
Yes, it's an amazing photograph. Sure. I think maybe I'm going to do another piece that's also relatively new. It's a piece about the city where my father grew up. It's called Facing Worcester. And I have had so many PDF files that that's going to take me a little bit of time to find this.
Would you like me to read? Would
sure,
you like me
yeah,
to read one?
That'd be good.
All right, then. I'd like to read one by Amiri Baraka. It was written in 1969, and the title of the poem is The New World. The sun is folding. Cars stall and rise beyond the window. The workmen leave the streets to the bums and painters' wives pushing their babies home. Those who realize how fitful and indecent consciousness is stare solemnly out on the emptying street, the mourners and the soft singers, the liars and seekers after ridiculous righteousness, all my doubles and friends whose mistakes cannot be duplicated by machines, and this is all of our arrogance, being broke or broken, dribbling at the eyes, wasted lyricists and men who have seen their dreams come true only seconds after they knew those dreams to be horrible conceits and plastic fantasies of gestures and extensions, shoulders, hairs, and tongues distributing misinformation about the nature of understanding. No one is that simple or priggish to be alone out of spite and grown strong in his practice. Mystics in two-pant suits are style and discipline controlling the method of knowledge. Beatniks, like bohemians, go calmly out of style. And boys are dying in Mexico who did not get the word. The lateness of their fabrication marks their holes with filthy needles. The lust of the world, this will not be news. The simple damning of lust. Float flat magic in low-changing evenings. Shiver your hands and dance. Empty all of me for knowing and the will of danger of identification. Let me sit and go blind in my dreaming and be that dream and purpose and device. A fantasy of defeat, a strong, strong man, older but no wiser than the defect of love. That is The New World, written in 1969 by Amiri Baraka. All right, Marianne, you're on.
Okay. This is Facing Worcester from this summer, and Worcester, Massachusetts is the town where my father's family is from, and it's the closest city to where I grew up in Massachusetts. Myself a compass needle, I face north towards my birthplace, the antique hospital on one of seven hills in the city of spas, piazzas, parlors, and tonic, words no one uses anymore. I face rice squares, African cloth stores, bodegas, and Indian fonts on bags of rice and red lentils, remembering the Polish nuns who fought Grampy on how to say his name. I face the city of Water Street, barrels of dill half sours, kosher soap, hipsters, whiskey bars. Thank you.
All right, that was very nice, Marianne. You know, Marianne, we have another caller.
All right. Okay, right, I'm going to switch over.
All right. Area code 316, the first three numbers are 210. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Michael. This is Linda Imbler from Wichita, Kansas.
Yes, hello, Linda. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm great.
This is a pleasant surprise.
Well, I wanted to surprise you.
All right.
I had two poems that they're kind of October-ish, with October being the wild month of the demons and the goblins and such. My first one is called "He's Crazy About You." Stalking psychotic, fascinated saboteur under such grand illusion, in stealthy pursuit, bewitched beyond good reason, this fool's beguiling of self. He's been watching you. Your true love is arriving tonight.
What was the inspiration?
Halloween. And just all the slasher movies and silly stuff.
All right. And you have another?
I have another one that's called Gossips.
All right.
Both inside and outside a haunted house, the dead fear you more. So avoid them in dark alleys on account that you do not startle them. For I guarantee that they are there. They like to wander because they're as curious as cats. They do enjoy a good look inside windows, especially if places where they have lived. Would you deny them the pleasure of remembering their past? They only want to live up to your eulogies of having connected, and the questions of life never cease, even for them. They watch closely to see and hear what goes on around them. For there are very few spirits without a face, and none without ears. They share news of what they have seen and heard. I have been told they are some of the most consummate gossips on the planet. For this reason, Beware of seances, where the dearly departed might tell all your secrets. It might make for a most embarrassing day.
Right. I like that.
Thank you.
Do you have another?
I do. It's not Halloween. It's
that's all right.
One that I do. An inspiration. I'm not really a jazz person. I forgive
mm-hmm.
anybody that loves jazz. I apologize profusely on the radio right now. I'm more of a blues person, but I did write this poem about jazz. I have a brother-in-law who's a professional jazz player, and so I felt like I at least owed him a chance to try and write something
right.
decent. It's called The Bebop Girls. The Bebop Girls prance down the street in short skirts, high heels, three chicken dinners. They hear the beat, the A section from the Savoy Ballroom, their destination every Saturday night after dark. Stamp on hand, looks like a heart. Check IDs, fake, get in anyway, if you look the part. Audience floor crowded, moving bodies sway and slap, fingers snap, 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 watching the band trading fours. Stolen kisses from the combo cats, off stage in corners. A deuce ways of snow bought from stoners. Bathroom conference, go or stay. Free drinks, too hard to pass up. Too many and you get loaded. Up chuck queens at their porcelain thrones. Time to leave when time spent more in the powder room than on the dance floor. The bebop girls stumble out the door, juiced up wrens, stagger down the street, still hearing the beat. That swanky sound from the Savoy Ballroom every Saturday night.
I like that one, too.
Thank you. I had to get all the jazz terms in there. You know, I like beat poets, too, so I tried to put some kind of beat poet type stuff in there. Thank you for letting me read those. I appreciate it.
Well, I should share with everyone that Linda will be featured soon on the show. So look out for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you mentioning that. Have a good evening.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
I'd like to share a piece by Margaret Atwood. The piece is titled Postcard, and it was written in 1981. I'm thinking about you. What else can I say? The palm trees on the reverse are a delusion. So is the pink sand. What we have are the usual fractured Coke bottles and the smell of backed up drains, too sweet like a mango on the verge of rot, which we also have. The air, clear sweat, mosquitoes and their tracks, birds blue and elusive. Time comes in waves here, a sickness one day after the other rolling on. I move up. It's called awake. Then down into the uneasy night, but never forward. The roosters crow for hours before dawn, and a prodding child howls and howls on the parked road to school. In the hole with the baggage, there are two prisoners, their heads shaved by bayonets and 10 crates of queasy chicks. Each spring, there's a race of cripples from the store to the church. This is the sort of junk I carry with me, and a clipping about democracy from the local newspaper. Outside the window, they're building the damn hotel. Nail by nail, someone's crumbling dream. A universe that includes you can't be all bad, but does it? At this distance, you are a mirage, a glossy image, fixed in the posture of the last time I saw you. Turn you over. There's the place for the address. Wish you were here. Love comes in waves like the ocean, a sickness which goes on and on, a hollow cave, in the head feeling and pounding a kicked ear. Margaret Atwood. We'll be right back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. We have a few moments more, and welcome to Quintessential Listening Poetry. If you'd like to call in, please, the number is 646-787-1631. We've had a fantastic night tonight. We were able to feature the work of Anne Christine Tabaka, her beautiful work. We want to say thank you to Anne Christine for allowing us to feature her work. What I'd like to do as we close out is to recite another piece that I've written, and its title is Carrie, and it's dedicated to the memory and legacy of Carrie Halsell Ward. 1903 to 1989, Carrie was the first African-American to graduate from Oregon State University in 1913. In 1913, she graduated. And a number of years ago, they held a great ceremony in her honor, and I was asked to write a piece for her, a piece as a tribute to her legacy. And the piece is called Carrie. She reached out and touched history, although many could not imagine that it was her plan. Given that she was young, life still developing, gelling as a creation, still being molded, forged in hues of ebony, bronze, and gold. She reached out and touched history, although the fathers of the day refused to believe that she could do so. Given that she was a woman, the right to vote for mothers of all fathers still in its infancy, the casings of a woman's world still regulated to the margins of society, despite pleas of social reform from suffragettes and cries of "Ain't I a woman too?" from noble voices that yelled out far reaches of distant cotton fields and other disdained places of work. She reached out and touched history, although the academicians of the day could not fathom that it was her plan. She was gifted and had the desire and dedication to educate and uplift those who too sought knowledge, freedom, and power. She reached out and touched history, although legions could not foresee it could be her plan, given that she was black, colored black when black was not yet a color, human in one world and not another, living in space, time, and place when it was not yet conducive to be young, gifted, black, and to be a woman. Nevertheless, she reached out and touched history. And history observed and responded in kind and reached out and met her touch, applauding she was young and full of hope and promise, reveling that she was a woman, one half of whole, yet whole, perfect, and complete, relishing that she was gifted, leaving the hallowed halls of academe, a college graduate, learned as she set forth to conquer new horizons and find ways of surviving and thriving in a world where she already knew that despite the odds of achieving, she was still a woman, still a woman, celebrating proudly because she was black, convinced of her human right to exist, to learn to be free, to be Carrie. She reached out and touched history, and history responded in kind. It reached out and met her touch. Destiny smiled and mirrored their ebony night-hewn embrace, creating a legacy of opportunities for all of us to achieve goals, reach dreams, and ascend undaunted by the limits of our imagination. I'd like to thank everyone. I'd like to thank those individuals who called in tonight. Please call in again. Next month, we'll have another open mic poetry reading. Again, my name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and thank you for listening to Quintessential Listening Poetry. Good night.